My Life Now is a half-hour podcast show which regularly features reviews of new releases and all-time classics of both traditionally published and self-published books.
Tune in for special guest interviews and, of course, helpful tips to not only write your next book, but also to help market it.
My Life Now is most often referred to as a great way for authors to get quality exposure and avid readers to discover their next read.
Without further delay, here's another stimulating episode of My Life Now.
Hello, everybody. This is another episode of My Life Now, and I'll be your co-host today, Etrill York. It's a pleasure to have all of you watching with us. We are with Vaughn today. We're going to be talking about her book, I Am the Process. Vaughn, would you introduce yourself to us?
Hi, guys. So, yes, as he said, my name is Vaughn. My full name is Vaughn Gretchen Smith Gross, and I am now an author. I wrote my first book, and it came out, last year I wrote my first book, and it came out December 13th. Man, it's crazy. Self-edited by my husband. My husband edited, and we both self-published together, and it came out on Amazon December 13th of 2023. And so, you know, it's out there now, it's out there. And let's see, I'm a mother, of course. I'm a mother of four. I am a wife of 19 years. Whew. Amen. All of our children are grown now. So the worrying is like, be anxious for nothing. It's really, really hitting home now because they're grown and doing their own thing. But anyway, as for career-wise, this is my 20th year as a nurse, as a licensed vocational nurse. This is my, I started in 2019, 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, 2024. This is my fifth, this is my fifth year as being a certified holistic life coach. I started my own nonprofit organization in February of 2019, called Surviving on Purpose Certified Life Coaching Ministry. And with that, I opened up the window to mental health, mental illness within the African American culture, something that we don't do. And from there, God has just allowed me to just open up to not just the African American culture, but now, you know, to everyone, and to get this message out and to start talking about taking care of ourselves holistically, not just one-sided, all, you know, as we think.
Surviving so really purpose. Surviving mm-hmm. purpose, that's a powerful title right there. Just a lot in that.
It's a lot, you know, and I have been saying it for a while, but it didn't really register until my second, my second visit in a mental health hospital. I've been in a mental health hospital twice. The first time was in 2017. And let me just give you the background of that right quick, because that way you can follow me through this. Our oldest daughter at the age of 15, she is now 24. She'll be 25 this year. But at the age of 15, she became pregnant. You know, it was nothing like, oh my God, you know, it's like, okay, let's handle it. Let's do what we got to do. Jump into mommy nurse mode or whatever, and had to do everything that we needed to do. Pretty much homeschooled her because she was going through so much. She gave birth. Well, you know, going back and forth to the doctor. And one of the times they told us, they were like, you know, we want you to see a specialist. And I'm like, okay. I said, well, tell me what you're talking about, because I'm in that field. Okay. So, and normally I don't tell people, I don't do that, because I want them to be genuine with me. So I don't go in and say, hey, well, I'm this and I'm in this and I know that. I don't do that. But at that time I knew I needed to say something about who I was and ask the questions that need to be asked. And so they sent us and they did a sonogram, and they were thinking that he was going to have like dwarfism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm like, we're like, okay, you know, we can deal with that, like, whatever, because I had been a nurse for a while, since 2004, and this was 2016. So I was good with it. I was like, okay, we can handle that. So then we started going to Dallas, and going to her appointments in Dallas, and they were still saying the same thing, and they were trying to do genetic and this and that, trying to find out. But anyway, went to a doctor's appointment, and she was having contractions. She was fully 9 months, so that was a blessing. And they sent us to straight to the hospital. We got to the hospital. They wanted to deliver by C-section, which was nothing but God. It was nothing but God. God intervening. God, oh my gosh. It was nothing but God, because our grandson was born with osteogenesis imperfecta. And I don't know if anyone knows it, but that's something that it's rare, but it's real. And it's called the brittle bone disease. And our grandson had stage 4. He had like one of the worst stages. And I think I'm saying that correctly, but he had the worst stage. So what we found out soon after she delivered was that it was OI, and that our grandson was born, like when they delivered him, he was born with 27 fractures. That's just them taking him out of the C, with the C-section. So, and then they also told us, they said there are fractures that we see that have healed. And the doctor says, so that he said, what I'm trying to tell you is that every time Bryson moved in utero, would kick and this and that, he would break.
Oof.
So he broke and healed, broke and healed, broke and healed. Yeah. So he was born with 27 fractures, and that was not including the fractures that happened in utero. It was a lot, because I didn't know a lot about OI. I really didn't even know anything about OI, to be honest with you. I was like, just tell, like, what are we doing? Like, what? And so because of that, his ribs were the main thing that broke in utero. And so when you don't have it, like when you do have fractures in the rib, you they it's certain things they want you to do to make sure that they sit right, so that they fuse back together in the right order. Well, his didn't. So his thoracic cavity, was, and your lungs are, they sit in the thoracic cavity inside the ribs as protection. But anyway, his thoracic cavity, his ribs didn't fuse where they should have, like they should have, to make them like out and like longer. So his lungs couldn't expand all the way because of how his ribs came, formed back together. So Bryson died of respiratory distress at the age of 2 months old. So from the time she gave birth, we were on the road constantly, back and forth to Dallas, back and forth to Dallas, back and forth. We even just started staying, me and her. And that was the hardest thing, when we got that phone call and they told us, we need you to come down the highway. And we were like, oh, okay. And me as a mother, watching my 16-year-old give permission to have her son, her firstborn, our first grandchild, be taken off of life support was horrific.
Man, how traumatic that must have been for the family. Nothing but God could have got you through that.
Let me tell you something. I lost my mind. And I'm not even lying to you. Like, I lost my mind when they unhooked him. It's like I went blank. And I do remember, the thing I remember is sitting in the hallway screaming. And I remember the social worker telling the chaplain to let me be, because the chaplain kept trying to get me up and kept trying to talk to me. And the social worker, who had become like family to us, because she had done so much for us, and I remember her saying, let her be, let her scream, let her sit. Like, I was in the middle of the hallway screaming at God. I was angry. And I said, God, how could you do this? I was so angry. And, you know, I don't even remember going back into the room to see him. Once they, you know, because they clean him up and everything. And, and it's something because do you not know, like, the pictures that I look at of him afterward when they brought him in the room to be with the family so that we can hold him and this and that? Do you not know he looked so peaceful? He looked so peaceful. You didn't have to be careful with him. I was just like, wow. I remember like a picture that I keep in my phone of my mom holding him. And I'm like, wow, everything that we couldn't do while he was living, we were able to do when he was gone, you know, when he was physically gone, you know. And I was just like, no more pain.
Amen.
But that left a space, a hole in me, because I couldn't process how to be a mother to a mother, to a daughter who was a teenager who just gave birth and then turned around and lost her child. And I've never lost a child. All my children are living. I've never lost a child. I've never been through anything like that. And that was our first grandson. I didn't know how to handle that. Like, I was like, no one told me like how to handle things like that. And the only thing that I was getting from everyone around me, I was raised Pentecostal Church of God in Christ. So the only thing I was getting was, you need to pray. Pray, 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 pray. That's all I was getting. I don't remember much about his funeral. I didn't go see him before the funeral. My whole family went. When we came home from that trip of him, you know, when he, you know, died and we came home, our whole house was empty. My sister-in-law had went in and got everything. And our house was full of baby stuff, like full. And she had went in and got I do remember that. I do remember walking into our living room and it was empty with nothing, because it was them trying to protect me. I guess me and my daughter, I don't know. They knew that, I guess there's something that we didn't want to see. And I didn't go. I didn't go with them when they went to get him dressed. I didn't go with them to pick out anything. And I don't remember much at the funeral, except for my son telling me that I was trying to jump into the grave. Yeah. I was trying to go into the grave hole when they were putting him. Yeah. And I don't remember it. I was that zoned out. I was on medicine, but I was also that zoned. And I don't remember anything after that, of that day. I can't tell you who I was there. I'm telling you, I don't. And even now, I don't even try to remember. I just, you know, I just go with the flow of it. And I'm just like, you know, God, thank you for keeping me when I couldn't keep myself, because if I had it my way, I would have left with him. And that's what I mean. And that'll take us straight to what happened with me. All I was hearing was pray. That's all I remember hearing. And it was not working. Oh my God. I know that people are like, oh my, how could you say prayer doesn't work? I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, at that moment, at that time, prayer was not the only thing I needed, and I didn't know what else I needed. I just knew that I was not right. I knew that I was angry with God. I knew that I was praying, and I was saying, God, I'm so angry, but take this from me. I don't want to be angry with you, because I want you to help me, because I don't know how to do this, and please help me, help me. And like nothing was happening. I felt like nothing was happening. And so 2017 is when I took 55 Xanax. I went in my bathroom. Yeah. I went in my bathroom and got in the tub and I took my whole bottle of Xanax, 55. And the only thing that helped me or saved me, well, God's grace, but my kids, they knew that anytime I took a bath, I always left the door cracked open, because kids don't leave you alone. When like in the mama never gets a break. Mama never, it don't matter where you are. So I always left. But that day I closed the door. And I really don't remember anything from there except for waking up at the hospital.
Praise
And
God. Praise God that they came, that those kids came through. Man, praise God.
I remember waking up and I remember my pastor being there saying, "You can't leave us. Like, you can't." And I was livid. When I woke up, they didn't know, but I was mad because I was like, I do not want to be here. I'm like, I don't want to be here. I don't want to live. Why am I still here? What am I supposed to, like, I can't do this. So at that time, I was court ordered to go to a mental health hospital. So I did. And me being me, you gotta know, I mean, I'm a nurse. And I'm in that field, and so I knew what to say, how to say it, when to say it, what to do, because I wanted to just get out. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, man, okay, I don't have time for this. Like, just let me out. And I didn't even know what I was gonna do when I got out. I just knew that I just wanted to get out. You know, I was like, let me out. So of course I got out. And I went back to work and everything, but nothing was the same. Like, I was taking medicine, and but I was a walking, I can't even tell you what I was. I just know that I was not right. My mind was not right. My body was not right. I couldn't pr and I believe the only reason why I was able to work because it was printed in my mind routine. Like, I knew how to nurse. Like, literally, I knew how to do. So I was just functioning. You know, I was just dysfunctionally functioning, literally. And but I remember Christmas of 2018. I remember sitting on the couch, and it was the 26th, December 26th. That's our son's birthday. I remember telling him, I said, "Hey," I said, "Once y'all go see your Nene, take your sister and y'all go over there and see your Nene and everything." And they did. And as soon as they left, I called the suicide hotline. And I told the lady that I didn't want to harm myself, but I was having severe suicidal ideation and I needed help. And she sent the constable to my home. And they came and they got me. And they were so understanding with me. But that was the day that I told God, I said, "If you go with me in here, and if you help me, like, just go me in here, and if you help me, I will take advantage of everything they offer in this building. If it's offered, I'm taking it. I'm gonna do it. I don't care what it is. Like, I'm gonna do it." And I told him that. And I said, "And when I get out, I will not close my mouth." I got out December the 31st of 2018. You know, we do the ritual of New Year's Eve. You go to church. You know what I'm saying? To bring in a new year. That was us. And so we did. We went to church. I got out the same day, got out, went home, got dressed, went to church. And but my mind was different. I remember even sitting in church, I remember my mind being different because I'm sitting there saying, "These people don't even know that I just got out of a mental health hospital. Literally, I just got out. I've been in there since December 26th. They don't know." You know what I'm saying? That's how you don't know what people are going through that you are next to. You don't know. And I'm just like, "Oh, wow." But I got up and I told it. I said, "I just got released from the mental hospital." You know, and I know people were looking at me like, "Why is she so bold? How she just talk like, you know?" And I've always been that way. I was like that when I was in the streets. So I'm still like that. But I was just, you know, I was like, "Yeah, I just got out." And so, you know, I know y'all are grateful that you're coming through to a new year, but you just don't know. You don't understand how I'm not even supposed to be here, but I'm here. And from the and then February 2019 is when I became a certified holistic life coach. And I started literally getting together everything to start surviving on purpose. And that was, man, I've been running since then, I'm telling you, and it's been hard. It's not easy because I'm not accepted. Mm-hmm. I am not. And I hate to say it like that, but I gotta be real with you. You're gonna understand that I'm real. I'm a real one. And you know, I'm not, and I'm needed, but I'm not wanted. Yeah. And I deal with that. And it took me a while to deal with that because that was the part of the rejection. I was rejected when I started coming out, talking about what I went through and how prayer didn't work and how I went into, you know, the mental hospital and I found out it's another way and that you have prayer, but it's some other things that you need, therapy. I started talking about all that therapy, psychologist, you know, meetings and this and that. And I know that oh my gosh, I started asking questions like, why is it that, you know, what goes on in this house stays in this house and this and that and this and that. Oh, I started, man, look at her. Yeah. I started opening up everything. Like I started, hey, let me tell you something. I came from a home where my dad was an alcoholic. That right there is what brought the chaos with me and my family because I opened up about what we went through with my dad. Even though I know the community knew, but that was a hush thing. You don't talk about that. You know, that's Deacon Smith. You don't talk about that stuff and this and that. But I started saying, man, look, I've been around alcohol. I've been in the streets, you know. I had to get it out the mud, you know. I've been in a gang. I've been in, you know, I just started telling, just started talking about the things. And like, then I started talking about the mind and the mental. And then I said, that's when I started talking about holistic. I remember holistic, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, and how God broke it up for me when I was in that facility. That's where let me tell you something. That's where my life changed. My grandson's death saved my life. It saved my life in a mental hospital.
Amen.
In a mental, not at the church, not at during the convocation, not at the prayer meeting, but in a mental hospital where you are in a room and that's pure white. You can't have anything, strings, pen, like all you have is crayons and coloring books and, you know, the TV. And I mean, like, yeah, like the doors locked. I was in there with 17 other people that I didn't know. And God showed me, he said, you in here with 17 other people from all different walks of life, but y'all yet are the same. Mm-hmm. Y'all are the same. That one on meth, this one that, this one that, this one that, but y'all are the same. You need, like, you're needing the same thing. You're
different,
needing
different
life.
Times of grace, huh? Different
times of grace. God. Oh my God. That's where he broke it down to me. He said, you in here with 17 other people. Now, he protected me because it's sometimes I was like, man, look here. Like, I got my, you know, I ain't going to be taking no sleeping pills because I need to be aware if my door open or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But he put me in a place with 17 other people who were from all different walks of life, from all different things. Ooh, some stuff that like will blow your mind. Even one lady was in there 7-8 years old. She was in there. She killed her husband.
Yeah.
You know, and she had been in there for 2 months because she just couldn't. And, you know, but she was the sweetest. She was the sweetest. And she would tell you, I don't know why I did it. You know, I don't know why I did it, but I'm going to get better. And, you know, she had been there for 2 months and they were still working with her. And I seen that. I was like, man, you know, and It was an 18-year-old in there who was postpartum depression. She had just had a child and she left the child, just left the child, you know what I'm saying? And just went on doing what she was doing, literally, and ended up at the mental hospital. And then she was like, how do I be a mother? How do I get my child back? Because I just, you know, like things started. I'm telling you the stuff that you hear. And I was like, and God said, yeah, this right here is life. This is life. This is life right here, holistically, mentally. I could be emotional. I could be emotional.
And how important.
I wasn't told that I couldn't be emotional. I was told to be emotional. I was told to talk about the thoughts that come through my head, even though I don't act on them, still talk about it. I was told, yeah, oh yes, we want to, how are you feeling today? Like, I wasn't used to any of that. I wasn't used to group therapy where we sitting around at a table and we talking about how we feel, and then all of a sudden another person is saying, oh my gosh, well, you know, I felt like that 2 days ago, and let me tell you, this is it. Like for real, and we in a mental hospital. So, and being taught that be emotional and talk about it. You know what I'm saying? Be like that, your mental, how you think and what you're thinking, talk about it. Ask, is this right? Or why am I thinking this way? Because that's where your coping mechanisms, like your mind, coping. How do I cope with this? Because this is how I'm thinking, and this is my perspective, and then this is reality. I was taught all that behind the walls of a mental hospital. And then God, even the spiritual part of accepting everyone as your sister and brother, no matter what they look like and what they've been through. It doesn't matter what they, it don't matter what color they are. It doesn't matter. Look, none of it matters. We are all broken in some type of way. We all need healing, some type of healing. We all need grace. We all need mercy. We all need God. We all need. And it was like he was showing me. He said, now when you get out of here, talk about it. And don't shut your mouth, because you said that you would not close your mouth. Now, he didn't tell me the rejection was going to hit hard. Oh, but it hit hard. And it still hit. I'm not the most popular woman here in Tyler, Texas, even though God keep opening doors. He just keep opening doors in certain places and this and that. My phone doesn't ring really, unless it's, hey, sis, you know, I need prayer or session. And that was the thing when I started doing the life coaching, and God had me start doing sessions. I couldn't charge. You know, I was like, my husband was like, well, what you gonna, like, what are you gonna charge? Because man, you be talking to these people like 2 hours and like 3 hours, and you know, nonstop, and you close the door and y'all just, you know, going. And I said, you know, I don't know. I said, I've been trying to figure out, you know, like I said, I don't know if I need to change it to like surviving on purpose consultants. And I had did try, kind of tried to, I wrote it out. God said, no, write it back. He said, put ministry right back in there. I didn't tell you put consultants. This ain't no consultant. This is ministry. And you're not going to charge because I didn't charge you.
Dive into Keith Cooper's transformative journey in Taking the Mask Off, My Journey from Dr. Seuss to the Bible. Unveil layers of self-discovery and resilience. Through journaling, Keith navigates grief and embraces authenticity. This creative narrative, a transcription of his therapeutic path, is a compelling read. Experience the power of unmasking. Get your copy on Amazon and embark on a journey of reflection and healing. Introducing the New Life Discipleship Workbooks, your guide to spiritual growth and fulfillment. Whether you're starting out or seeking deeper insights, these three workbook editions cater to your needs. Unlock Christian fundamentals, delve into immersive studies, and join a supportive community. Ready to engage your passion for God? Visit www.waytruthem.org. That's www.waytruthem.org. Or buy on Amazon.
And is this where you were able to put all this stuff into I Am the Process? Is this where it all came from? Man,
Yep.
when you've been given a powerful revelation like that, how could you not write it down, right?
How could you not? how could you not? And that's when he started taking me like through all, I know I've done over 300 sessions, and I think the youngest was 8. The youngest child was 8 years old, and the oldest was 67. The oldest person was 67 years old. And I go and talk wherever, you know, not charging, you know, people ask me, what do we owe? And they, if they give, God said, take. But as far as you giving them a price, no charge, not until I start telling you. And I tried to charge, and he said, what did I tell? Oh, I've got popped several times because I tried to do this thing my way. You know, it's mine. And no, it's not mine. That's why I was telling you the book. The only thing I can take credit for is the testimony, but the guiding of the process. And I'll give you just a little bit. I'll give you just a little bit because I feel like I need to. The way God had me sit down in that living room, and I was just sitting there and I'm reading through the Bible and this and that. And he's like, you know, the first thing that helped you was you acknowledged that you needed him. And I was like, okay. I wrote it down, acknowledged. And he said, okay. Now, after you acknowledge, there was a breaking point. There was some breaking, but there was also some building. So then B, I put breaking and building. And then he said, go to the next one. And then you had some crushing moments, but I cultivated you out of those crushing. Man, he started going down through the, I'm not lying to you. I'm not lying to you. And I was just like, what's going on? And he said, what I'm trying to get you to see is you can't take the good without the bad.
Right.
You're going to have to go through some things, and everything is not going to be okay. That's where I understood that all things were, you know how you just say scriptures because you've been taught scriptures in church and this and that, and they tell you to say everything is working for your good, and then it's in a song and this and that. But baby, do you really know that when you're being broken down and you don't, and you want to leave here, you want to leave earth, it's going to work out for your good. When he tell you, you ain't going to work, you're going to stay right here until I tell you, it's working out for your good. Can you, I mean, like literally when your grandson dies at 2 months old, and you see your daughter 16 years old having to take her child off of life support, and you never thought that you would feel that, and you know you're not going to see him again, and you know, like, tell me, how do you handle that part right there? Man, don't play with me. Like,
God said, even this
is, and that's when he told me, he said, do you understand that I was not going to allow, he said, first of all, he's mine. I give and I take.
Come on.
So he was, first of all, he was mine. He said, second of all, I will not put more on you than you can bear. I was not going to allow my son to lie there in pain. He came in for a purpose. He gave his purpose and he left.
Powerful.
And that's why I know a lot of people look at me crazy, but he right there. A lot of people look at me crazy, but this arm right here is my life. Like, literally. And yeah, a lot of people are like, oh man, she tatted up and this and that. And I'm like, yeah, they don't even realize like that, you know, my grandson saved my life. He said he came and he did his purpose. Because if he had not came, you wouldn't have went to where you went. You would not have even suffered how you suffered. And you had to suffer to get to the point to where you were, to understand that you could not save yourself and that there was something more that you needed. And he said, and that's where I started. That's where it all started to make sense, behind the doors of a mental hospital. Man, that right there was the most powerful thing. I'll say that's the most powerful thing that I can say has ever been done in my life, because it was not done where you think that saving and great, like all these things that we talk about is done. Where do we go? We rush to the church. The church is the hospital. Okay. All right. Well, what if you can't get to the church? Where do you pray? Where you are? Can you lay flat on your face at work? Can you go in the bathroom, put down paper towel and lay flat, or get on your knees, like anywhere? Can you do it anywhere? Yes, you can. Yes, you can. He said, no prospective place. I'm everywhere. I'm sovereign. Oh, my God. things started, he said, you will no longer talk about things that you don't know, because I'm going to show you. And when you talk about it, you're going to be about it. Ain't no more talking and not knowing what you're talking about. If you're talking about it, you better believe that you're going to know what you're talking about. That's why I sit and look at people and just be like, man. And I ask them, tell me, what have you been through? That's why I haven't left anything. There's nothing in my life that has been wasted. Not being in the streets, not being in the game, not knowing street talk, because guess I can connect with anybody. I can connect with anybody. What's up? What's up, bro? Come here, let me holler at you.
Are those some things that you brought up in the book?
Connecting.
Right. Yep. What are some key lessons or insights that you gained from your journey, whether it be out of there on the streets or coming to the mental health institution?
Identity crisis.
So you could look at those people right now that are either still out there, because, you know, a lot of us having come from the streets or whatever, we're told, oh, well, you need to hold everything in. There ain't no time to be crying and all that different stuff. You could look at those people that are dying on the inside. What would you say to those people based on your experiences?
Let it out. Holler at me. Come talk to me. I'm not here to judge you. I want to hear it all. Like, I'm not even limited, you know, like, honestly, you know, I could have died a long time ago. I took 55 Xanax. I shouldn't even be here. Like for real. I got it out the mud. You know what I'm saying? I got it out the trenches. You know what I'm saying? I didn't get this. I went in. I was dirty. Like, I had to go through the thick mud to get this. Like, it wasn't given to me. I had to struggle to get this. And guess what? It started at a mental hospital. When I say that, people be like, what? Because they look at me and they're like, her? No. And that's why if you look at the front of my book, you're going to see a mugshot. You're going to see a mugshot. Because in this process, I went to jail. Going through this anger, dealing with this anxiety, dealing with this depression, dealing with the enemy, like, literally, you gotta stay focused. You have to, like, staying focused, being strategic. Oh my God. Focused, strategic, because the enemy know exactly where your wounds are, and he know where your weakness is. And he know what you're still dealing with from back then. And that was another key that when I tell you identity crisis, guess what? I was still suffering from a little girl. Mm-hmm. I was still suffering. Like, that's what I'm telling you. When I got out, I started asking my daddy questions. Daddy, why you choose alcohol? Why you choose to be an alcoholic over being there? You know, you paid the bills, No. Don't you call him no alcoholic. No. And I know the definition. I know what we went through. I'm the only girl and I'm the baby. And I kept asking my dad. Me and my dad have just come to a point of resolution this year. I kept asking, why? I just needed you. Like, why can't you be there for me? Why can't you say I'm proud of you? Why can't you, you know, I've done all these things and I can't remember you being there. Like, when I went to college, I'm the only one that's went to college and graduated and all these things. I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And the first Sunday of this year is the first time that I've heard my father get up and speak in front of a congregation and tell them, this is my daughter and I'm so proud of her. Everything that she does seems to blossom.
Yeah.
She's covered. Like, that was the first time. I'm 43.
Man, but just like the cover of your book, that is the image of redemption.
Yep.
Man, what a blessing that is to be able to receive that.
Yeah.
You know, before your father's gone and all those different things, you can just, you're able to live in, it's like God honored what you've been through and what you've said. Can you imagine if you would have just stayed quiet?
Closed mouths don't get fed.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about the real bread. I'm talking about the real bread. Closed mouths don't get fed. That's a real live statement. If you bring it to the perspective of what it needs to be, you can literally wear it, put that on a t-shirt and wear it all day long. Closed mouths don't get fed. Because God said, I want to know. I already know, but I want you to tell me. I want you to know. I want to know it all. I want to hear the curse words. I want to hear what you're feeling. He said, because I can handle it. You think I can't handle this and I already know it's there? Like, I already knew you were going to be at this point. I need to know that you trust me enough to where you'll open up and tell me what you're feeling and how you're thinking this and that. And see, people don't know that. They're afraid to do that because that we've been told over and over and over, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do, but that we've never been told what we can do.
Right.
What can I do?
Come on.
You know, because I don't know what to do. I can't do this and I can't do that, but what can I? And that was the position that I was in when I attempted suicide. I was in that position of not knowing what I could do and what I couldn't do and what and how to do. I didn't know. And so I just said, I don't want to be here. No one understands. I kept saying, no one understands me. No one understands what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And then I was just done. I was done talking. And I took the pills.
Yeah.
Because I was done trying to explain how I felt and no one would listen to me. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't listen. They just kept saying, but you know, baby, I know, but you just got to keep praying. God gonna see you through. That's all I kept hearing. And it was just like, but you're not listening to me. What do I do in the meantime? What do I, like, cause I can't, like what, I can't, when I can't sleep, what do I do? Like I stay on my knees and pray for 3 hours. Like, I don't know how do I get sleep? How do I rest? How do I slow the thoughts down in my mind? Medication.
Yeah.
Take your medication and pray.
So knowing what you know now, what are the answers to those questions?
Ooh. Prayer, hope, resilience, perseverance.
What would you say those resilience looks like in behavioral terms? Like what, say I was struggling with suicidal thoughts, what would I need to do to walk out and gain that healing that you're talking about and that resilience and hope?
Be honest. Mm-hmm. That's the number one thing. We don't be honest. We so fake. Mm-hmm. Think about it. You got to think about this. What's the main thing right now? What is the main thing that everybody is so is trending and everybody is so like, oh, I can't, I got to have it. I can't do that. Like, I got to Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. You got to think life, like society, it's like the social stuff. It's telling you who to be. And you're afraid to be who you are. You're afraid to be your true self. Because when you be your true self, then you're really going to see who's for you and who's not. So then why do you think you have so many celebrities who are committing suicide? They don't know how to be them. They want to be them their true self. But how do I be my true self when I've made it this far off of being what smiling and being what everybody want me to be? And I'll say this, I think his name Tripp, the dude from Ellen, the dude from the show of Ellen, the DJ, mm-hmm. How everybody was so like, oh my God, how did, like no one knew anything. You can, if you go back to YouTube, you can literally look at this dude when he's talking about how the blacks were being killed and being mistreated and this and that. If you listen to him, you could hear the depression in his voice, but he works for a white woman. I'm going to be real with you. He works for a powerful white woman. He had made it. You know, his love was dancing. That was his love. That was his heart. So dancing had gotten him to so far. But guess what? Dancing couldn't keep him there. Dancing got him there. but it couldn't keep him there. He could dance. You danced your way to the top. But guess what? You forgot something, because you forgot your identity. You forgot your true identity, because then you danced and you smiled. Even when you was in pain, you still smiled and this and that. It's a difference when you're smiling and you're in pain and you're saying, I'm smiling, baby, but let me tell you something. I'm in some pain, but I know that it's going to be all right. So I got to smile my way through this, because, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to thug it out. It's different when you're saying that, or when you're just smiling and you keep dancing and this and that, and you keep your mouth closed, mm-hmm. and everything is okay. And then all of a sudden you hear that he went straight to a hotel close to his home and shot himself.
Man.
Like, nobody couldn't see that. Nobody could. You got all these people around him. He been through it. Like, and you mean to tell me they had just like had their wedding anniversary. You couldn't see that? Like, what? Not being honest. The honesty was like, I'm not happy. If I don't dance, will they still love me? Mm-hmm. If I don't smile, because it said that, you know, when he came in the room, he had this smile that made everybody else smile. But what about when he didn't want to smile? Could he not smile and it would be okay? He would still get paid? He would still be greeted the same way? No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't. So he had to keep doing what he had to do to get, like, yeah, that's why be careful what you do to get where you get and to go, because you got to keep doing it. And if you stop doing it, you may lose everything and everyone. But will you take that chance and say, I'm willing to lose all of this to gain my true identity? Because I'm tired of this. And that was the thing I was living in, identity crisis. All the accolades, mother, daughter. God showed me that. He said accolades, mother, daughter, nurse, sister, you know, like all these things, niece, granddaughter. He said, those are accolades. He said, I'm stripping you down. That was the process last year, 2023. He sat me down. You're not going to work. You're going to sit in this house and you're going to write. And I fought him, and I fought him. Every time I would like try to get a job, it would just be, I can't stand lazy people, and I can't stand people not doing the right thing. So I would just come home so frustrated, and then I would just be like, you know, I just start saying, you know what, I'm not doing this. Like, y'all crazy. I'm not fixing to do it. It's not right. I'm advocating for the patients. No, I'm not doing this. So I just kept finding myself in situations where I just have to keep quitting. You know, like, I'm not doing this. Like, what is going on? Can I find somewhere where people really, really care? Well, your season is for you to sit at, when you're not where you're supposed to be, it's not going to work out.
Right.
And I didn't want to sit. I didn't want to sit in my thoughts. I didn't want to sit in the quietness. You know, yeah. I didn't want to sit in that. I'm just being honest with you. I didn't want to sit because I still go through things, you know, and because right after I lost my grandson, then in 2020, I lost my best friend, who was the godmother of my grandson. And he was born on her birthday, and she was the godmother of my children. And she died in October of 2020 from COVID. So she's on my arm too. So those are two, like, I took a hit. When my grandson died, she was right. Like, she, when I was in the hospital and, you know, I couldn't, you can only talk for an hour on the phone. Like, literally, you can only visit for an hour. Like, all of that, I knew she had me. She was taking care of my children. I knew she wasn't sleeping with my husband. I knew that she had, like, man, come on. Yeah. You know? Mm-hmm. So when I lost her, I went through a whole nother identity crisis. Every time something was stripped, I went through an identity crisis because it was no longer there and I couldn't grasp it. And I was like, if I can't grasp that, then what do I grasp? Man, I got to find something else. I got to find another reason. I got to find purpose. What am I like? How do I do this thing? How do I live without Jamila? Like, that was my girl. That was, I could call her and she understood me. And so now, what do I do? Like, this ain't this is not right. And I went through an identity crisis. But last year, God stripped me from everything. Children started acting up. All three of them. I said, all three that I've given birth to, all three of them just went to, when I'm talking about acting up, I mean acting up, bringing up. And God started showing me. He said, I'm going to show you something that you don't like, that you're not going to like. But that's why I sat you down, because I need to show you some more things. And I also need you to write. So, yeah, I'm going to do some stripping and I'm going to have you write. It's going to be a rough year. But I didn't realize that it was going to be the roughest year of my life.
And how do you expect or how do you hope your book will contribute to the change, to changing perspective and fostering understanding about mental health?
Mental health, a lot of people don't understand that mental health is not the same thing as mental illness. When you say mental health, the first thing they think is you're crazy. No, mental health is the same as physical health. As you go to the doctor and you get your body, you go for a yearly checkup. You know, if you get a cold, what do? If you break a bone, what do? If you bruise yourself, what do? It's the same thing with your mind. It's the same. Go sit on someone's couch. You don't need a reason. Life is a reason to go just sit on somebody's couch and talk about life. Just life. Just your job. Like, think about it. Your job, your spouse, you know, how, like, this world we live in, how we're treated, how you're treated, what you want, what you don't want, what your goals are, what you know, like, your will, God's will, how you're struggling. Like, this is everyday life. But we feel like we don't need to go until we start thinking about suicide or depression or this and that. If it's proactive, be proactive and take care of your mind the same way that you take care of your body. Don't you go to the gym to exercise your body and to make sure you fit, and you're going to have to go and sit on somebody's couch or talk to a life coach. Do the same thing, because your mind, the mind is, that's your thoughts. That is where it, your heart and your mind. It tells you what to do. It tells you who you are and your perspective on life. Mental health, when you take care of mental health, I promise you, you will gain another perspective that you didn't even know you were not even grasping. And that's what happens, though. Just like when you go, you said it. You said when you get a certain age, you know, the doctor started talking and saying you need this and you need that. Okay. What about your mind? Because you don't have a child. When I was a child, I thought as a child. But you're a grown man. Right. What is it that you've been through in life? Not your physical up here. Because I know the struggle of you being an African-American man, especially dealing with the, you got to be strong. You got to be tough. You can't do this. Don't cry. Don't do this. Don't say this. Don't say that. Don't, man, you got to walk around like you got it. And this and that. Man, please. Okay, next. You know, where do you go to take care of that? Where do you go to let that out? Where do you go to understand your identity when you strip everything away from you and you realize that your real identity is you are a child of God? That's your true identity. Everything else is an accolade. It was added to you. Your name was added to you when you were born. Your mother and father, they added that name to you. God already he already knew who you were. To him, it's, that's my son. Okay. To your mom and dad, it's your name, and that's my son. This is so-and-so. This is my son. But God doesn't say that. He said, that's my son. He don't get, no. And that's your identity. That is your true identity. And then you understand your purpose. He will give you your purpose, but you got to understand who you are. And if you don't understand who you are, and that's up here, that's not the end of physical. That comes after this. You got to take care of your mind first to tell you, okay, I need to go to the store and get these pills. I need to do this. I need to do that. I need to do this. But if you in depression and you go to the doctor and they say, hey, you need to be on these pills, this and that, go get this stuff, and you haven't took care of this up here, then when you leave the doctor, man, I don't even feel like going to the store. I'm just going to go home and lay down. Depression. I don't even feel like being bothered with people. I'm going to go home and close all the blinds and get in the bed and go to sleep. You know, I'll do it tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes next week. And then next thing you know, you're in the hospital because you didn't take care of your body, but your mind was the thing that really needed help to think healthy about the rest of your body. You cannot. This is what I want people to understand. You cannot think one-sided when it comes to the human life. You cannot. God said you have to treat your mind, your body, and your soul, your physical being. Your what affects you emotionally affects you physically. What affects you mentally affects you emotionally, physically, spiritually. I'm depressed. I don't want to read the Bible. I don't want to hear nobody talking about prayer. I don't want to hear this. I ain't studying no doc. I'm going to bed. And everything else is going downhill. But because of your thoughts, the process of your mind, your perspective, what you're going through, because you hadn't let that out. It's stuck here. But if you let it out, even if you journal, write it out. Write it out. And you know, like, people don't even understand that. Write it out. I don't want to be here today. Why do I not want to be here? I am sick of this. Well, why are you sick of them? Because they do this. Well, why do they do that? Because they are hurting themselves. And so they don't know how to love me because they don't know how to love themselves. How you gonna get there? By right, sometimes you gotta see it before you see it. Right. I will tell it, and that's what I talk about in my sessions. Journaling.
Is that you gotta see it? Is that what you do at your organization? Can you speak to that a little bit more?
It's in the book. Mm-hmm. That's why I said it's a three piece.
Amen. Right.
It is the process is there, and that is God guiding through every chapter. And through every chapter, you'll have the process of what you go through. Then you have my testimony. And then you have the part that you fill out, which is your journal. Man,
it's not like a workbook.
You got to work.
Yeah, work it out.
You got to write it out. The questions come to you. What is it that God is telling you to acknowledge? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, after every chapter. And then after that, guess what it says? Your thoughts. That means journal. It's a 3-in-1.
Nice.
Can't nobody give you that but the Lord.
So finally, for people that are ready to go out and run and go and get this book, I'm going to go get my copy. How would they go and do that?
It's on Amazon. It is on Amazon. All you have to do is type in, I am the process. And the book is going to pop up. My name, Von Gretchen Smith Gross. And you're going to see the picture. It's going to be a mugshot that transitions into me just sitting there with my just in a thinking moment. And that's it. Just purchase. It's $20. Just click that. Purchase it. It's a paperback. When it comes to you, I promise you, if you read it and if you follow through it, and then if you like start writing in it, it's going to open you up to some stuff. And then in there, towards after everything else, he even had me do a 7-day challenge.
Yeah.
Who is God to you? A 7-day challenge. Seven challenge, day one, day two, day three. But that's even after the 10 chapters of the book. I'm telling you, he worked this through, and I didn't want to do it because I had to revisit every painful memory, everything. Not only what he was telling you guys and telling me, but then also telling what I went through.
But it helps you gain freedom.
Yep. Again,
Amen. So with that being said, that'll conclude our interview today. I hope everybody on My Life Now podcast will go out and get your copy. It was a pleasure having you, Vaughn. If you'll just hold on a second. Everybody just go out and get this book. It's going to be a great one. You're trying to get that freedom, trying to get away from those that mental health tug that you don't understand. This is someone that's been through it, someone that understands it. Go and get your copy now.
Yes, most definitely. Go get it.
All right. God bless you guys.
Thank you for listening and supporting another episode of My Life Now.
Please remember to subscribe to our podcast show and share it with a friend.
Together, we can keep the message of these books alive.
Until we turn the next page together, stay classy.